Welcome back to episode 2 of the BFast cast. It's actually a revisited version because we did record this a couple of weeks ago and it all went absolutely tits up. So we're back in the house, but basically the BFast cast is all about helping you to upgrade the way you look, feel, think, perform and live. And today V is in the house with me again and we're going to be talking a little bit about basically the sort of mindset and attitude that we try to develop as a bit of a framework for how we're going to help to improve like our overall lifestyle, how we think about training, work, you know, just like kind of looking after ourselves outside, family, home. We're going to talk through all these little things. But first up, we're going to catch up a little bit. So how you feeling, brother?
I'm okay. Drop. I'm going to answer honestly because I don't want to do the British thing where I just say I'm okay for no reason. But I'm actually quite tired.
Yeah, that's all right. How you feeling? What sort of tired? Physically, mentally?
Mentally, spiritually and physically.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. It's just been a long week. It's been a very, very long week. Even with the bank holiday.
Mm-hmm.
It's been quite a long week. Yeah, that's what I hate about bank holiday.
Yeah.
I love it because I get to rest. But on Tuesday when you wake up and go to work, even I didn't go to work on Tuesday, you know, everything piles up.
Yeah, sure. Is anything like in particular, in specifics, or?
You mean me personally, what I've done, or how I'm feeling?
Or just how you're feeling in that, because I think it's important, like, I know, like, it's something we're going to cover a bit more in future podcasts and episodes for sure, but I think, especially, like you say, it's a British mentality to, like, kind of cover everything over, but especially with guys, we want to sort of break down this attitude of everything's okay. If it's not, it's cool to not be okay as well and stuff like that. So I think the more we can kind of express that and talk about that sort of stuff, hope it'll help more people open up as well. And
yeah, in that sense, I am physically and mentally drained.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, sometimes I feel like asking for help, mm-hmm. I guess. But I don't know, I'm very prideful in that sense and I don't want to.
So what do you think it is like? Why do you think in particular blokes have this attitude? Because I say, for example, you know, like I see it all the time. If Sov's kind of going through something or wants some help or some chat or her mates and things like that, I think vice versa. Like girls, they're always messaging each other. They're on the WhatsApp. They're talking through everything. And I've found with blokes, it just tends to turn into, you know, it's either like not talked about at all or it becomes a bit of a banter session and just a bit of a kind of a, you know, like they just have a little bit of a laugh about it, but don't really sort of delve into the issues. And
should we get scientific?
Let's go.
Do you want to get scientific? I don't know anything about the science. These are just my theories.
Yeah.
Right. So you got the whole, is it an argument between the idea that men are a bit more predisposed to be kind of, they're the hunter gatherer kind of people. They're the ones that aren't supposed to show weakness. Or is it the fact that we've just been brought in a bit of society where we've got this idea of masculinity where then we don't show weakness? I don't know. I don't know the science. I'm not a psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I know how I feel. I feel like I don't want to ask for help because I'm prideful, because I... Actually, no, it's probably a bit of both. It's probably more the latter. As in, I just don't want people to think I'm a bit weak. Like I can get through everything. It's like when I'm sick at work, I don't want to admit that I'm sick. I don't want to go home, right? I want people to think that, you know, oh, he's a tough guy pushing through a sickness and stuff. And when you think about it and you say it out loud, it's really dumb.
Yeah.
It sounds really stupid. So if it's just a man thing, I can't say.
It is. It's a weird subject. And I know what you mean as well. Because like, I think just in all sort of different areas, like I've always felt myself to be a bit of a lone wolf with things, and like especially it comes to everything, like whether it's kind of like training or business or just sometimes weekends and chilling out and stuff, I've always had this attitude of a bit of a kind of lone wolf, whereas some people I know kind of thrive off being around people to recover and sort of like talk to people and stuff. I feel like I kind of need to take a step back sometimes and I need to kind of, you know, isolate myself a little bit just to kind of get myself back on track. And I think that used to work a bit more than maybe it does now. So I think, I don't know if it's especially like with men's mental health and stuff like that, it's something that is a lot more prominent recently, I think, you know, a lot more high profile issues and things like that. So I think it's definitely something that's becoming more mainstream. So I think maybe that's one of the things that's changing my attitude into, you don't have to sort it all out yourself. You don't have to kind of, you know, battle through it on your own and stuff. And one thing, we'll get Soph in here again. We talked about this last time, but we'll get Soph on to talk about this as well, because she went through a lot of therapy after quite a bad year with anxiety. And her therapist was very much into making her realise that it's okay to not be okay. And it's like, you know, we put on this brave face, but sometimes it is just pushing down the deeper issues. And like, you know, sometimes if we just kind of reach out and say, you know what, I'm feeling a bit shit today. It's cool. And yeah, it's working around that and finding how to kind of make that more of a thing that's okay and accepted, I think.
We might have glossed over this and made an assumption as well, but the core question is there value in even asking for help in the first place? Because there's an argument saying that if you could push through, build resilience in yourself, right, then you can get through tougher problems later on. But where do you lie in that argument? Do you even need to ask for help in the first place if you genuinely feel you can get through something? It's a tough one, isn't it?
It is a tough one, mate. That is a tough one. I think for me personally, I definitely feel like my natural instinct is to try and work through it myself first of all, but also, the other thing is, if you're doing that, are you just prolonging the process? So I'm going to kind of tie this into a business sense as well. Like, we've joined a network recently for the gym called the IFBA, International Fitness Business Alliance. And basically with that, it's a bunch of systems. It's a group of gyms around the country, led by a gym called W10 in London. And essentially, it is, you know, it's a framework and it's a guideline. So essentially, by signing up to the program, I've reached out for help to them. And it's accelerated so much in terms of what we do as a business as a whole, because it's allowed us to, you know, understand what people are doing well, what people are doing right, what people are struggling with, what kind of issues people are going through. And also realizing that everyone goes through the same shit, whether they admit it or not. I think that's a big thing. And that's obviously more from a business perspective. But I do feel like, even from like sort of a mental well-being perspective and that side of things as well, then sure, you probably can figure these things out yourself, because like a lot of these feelings are temporary. But if you were to just reach out to someone and speak through it with someone initially, is that going to shorten that whole cycle for you and kind of bounce off their experiences as well?
So it's coming from more of kind of a practical perspective.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
As in, if something's going to take you 10 weeks to get over or get past, with some help, it could take 5 weeks.
Yeah.
And we will have limited time, right?
Yeah,
Is that a good way to put it?
I think, yeah, I think so, 100%. And going back to Soph's situation last year, I feel like if she hadn't gone down the route of seeing like a therapist and like, you know, doing these things that she was doing, like she called them her non-negotiables. So even if she was having a real bad day, like riddled with anxiety and like didn't feel like she could face the world, she'd have these like non-negotiables. And the first one was just getting outside. So even if it wasn't, it's like ideally she wanted to kind of get out for a walk and get some fresh air and a bit of exercise. But some days it was literally she'd open the door and go and sit in the back garden and work through that side of things. And then she'd do that in, obviously in conjunction with the therapy, which was, that was a 12-month program that she went through on that as well. So it was like a 12-month thing. But had she not have done that, I think she'd probably still be struggling now. And I think that's something that a lot of people do, is they do struggle with things like anxiety and depression and like sort of chronic stress and things like that. But I think by not reaching out for help, that's why it becomes chronic and people do tend to have these struggles for years, rather than it being like a matter of like sort of like months. So I do think reaching out is a good thing now. And I do think, like I say, just is something that I kind of talked about before as well, but just kind of, I think normalizing these attitudes and behaviors a bit more for people to understand that it is like, especially like I say for blokes, I think we need to understand that we all go through struggles, and it's like toughing it out is obviously shown not to be the right way for a lot of people.
What does that even mean when you say tough it out?
I think, like you say, just bottling things up. I think that's the biggest thing, is bottling things up, not talking about things, not telling people that you're struggling. And I think, you know, like obviously it can lead to smaller issues like stress and depression and things like that. But obviously the big thing that it can also lead to is obviously this increase we've seen in male suicide rates and things like that, where people feel like they've got the weight of the world on their shoulders and they have no way out and no one to help and no one will understand where they're at. And I think that's something we need to sort of tackle, and something I think we definitely will have to dive into. If anyone that's listened to this knows any kind of experts, especially on this area, from any of the charities I know, like Mind are based in Birmingham and things like that. So if anyone listening to this has got any contacts for us, I think that'd be really good to get an expert on to help us talk through this and kind of express that a bit more as well.
Because what I've seen, this is all anecdotal, and it'll be that's why it'd be great to get an expert on. because it's not just, yeah, suicide is definitely one of the extreme kind of manifestations you see on bottling things up, but also like anger, like unbridled anger, how it affects other people, how it affects society and stuff as well. It is something that it feels like it all stems from someone saying, or it could be a reason, like someone saying, I don't feel these feelings or something, but this is what I just see, or we just see, I guess. An expert can really dive into this. We're really good.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, yeah, we'll definitely, we're going to recover this and we're going to come back to that as well. But like I say, biggest singers, listen to this now, you know, don't always feel the need to have to like gloss over things. If you're feeling a bit shit one day, it's cool, man. Like you can just, you know, you can be open and honest about that as well.
Jamie,
sometimes letting that off.
I feel shit.
That's cool, man.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good to open that up. And hopefully even just, does it help you speaking about it? Do you find that it makes you...
In this kind of medium, it's really helpful. Yeah. I've always felt like I've been quite, like, except just being not like honest about my day. I don't know. I feel like I could be quite open and honest about how I feel when someone asks me genuinely. Right? It's like if this kind of situation, it's one-on-one. I get how that could be a bit more intimidating in a group session, though. Just because there's a basis of trust.
Yeah.
I feel like you won't judge me.
Yeah.
Well, that's another issue to go into as well.
About,
you know, how society helps the person collectively as opposed to one-on-one, I guess.
But yeah, I think it's the biggest thing is, like I say, like, you know, just opening up from that today. Because I suppose before when you come in this morning, we've just finished a training session. And it's like, you know, it's kind of, it's in, it's straight into action, it's straight things like that. And it's hard to sometimes get that out, isn't it? If you're feeling that way and being able to kind of be open and express that as well. So I think it is important. And do you find benefit and relief from doing things like exercise and stuff? Or do some days you just feel that you're just kind of going through the motions and...
Oh, this is a good question. Because when it comes to exercise specifically, for me, right, sometimes I do feel like I'm just going through the motions. But it's the idea of how am I building my physical resilience to this? It starts off with my mental resilience because I'm feeling like I'm going through the motions, but it's like doing anything in terms of like procrastination, just literally get up, do 5 minutes of it and see how you feel. The hardest thing of like fitness for me is getting here.
Yeah.
Once I'm here, I'm going to do it. I know that for a fact. It's the kind of getting into the car, sitting at my desk at work, making that decision that I'm just going to book the session now and am I going to go to it? Or saying to you that I'm going to wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning to get here for 7, waking up at 6:20 and going, I don't feel like it anymore. And then justifying it, saying I was up late last night. And once I get past that and I'm here, it's not too bad. Building physical resilience isn't that tough to me. It's the mental resilience to get past that.
You
see what I mean?
There's a good guy. There's a guy called Paul Mort, and he used to have the same sort of thing. And his whole thing was, it was more on procrastination at the time. If you're not doing work as well, but I suppose it can kind of relate to things like this as well. But I think for a lot of people, it's they let their how they feel in the moment dictate the rest of the day or their next step, if you like. Whereas his big thing was just start something, like commit to 5 minutes, like you said there. After that initial period, things can get a little bit easier. So if you can kind of commit to that first 5 minutes, you might start to perk up and at least get through something. And sometimes you might do that 5 minutes and think, you know what, I'm really not feeling it today. And you just either finish the session there or you just kind of, you know, you just go and do some stretching or just, you know, sit down, chill out, just be in the environment and stuff. But I do think that that's kind of, that first 5 minutes rule is super important.
That changed my whole view on procrastination. I still do it. I still procrastinate like hell, but as long as I embody that mentality of, look, do 5 minutes. And if you're not, if you fail after 5 minutes, you were never going to do it in the first place. You didn't have the mindset, right? But most of the time, 90% of the time, you do 5 minutes, you end up doing 10, you end up doing 15. And then after that, you end up doing an hour of, it's like if it's a fitness thing, like I said, 5 minutes doesn't start when I get to the door here.
Yeah.
5 minutes starts way before that.
When I'm
at my desk.
Yeah.
And then once I do that, I'm here. That's fine. It's the same thing when I'm trying to write something for work. It's like, just do 5 minutes. And most of the time you end up doing more. But if you are going to fail, accept it and just move on, do something else.
Fine. Yeah, I think that's something that definitely a lot of people can't handle is that fear of failure. We'll actually get into this as well when we start talking about the attitude section in a second. But I think that's a lot of people are afraid to fail or afraid to not be as able to push as much as they were before or do as well as they have done in the past and stuff. And I think that comparison, both to other people and also to ourselves, or our kind of a stronger version of ourselves on a specific day, or a fitter version of ourselves, or a more sort of happier version of ourselves. I think that comparison, I think that's a saying, isn't it? Comparison can be the thief of all joy. You heard that before?
You're educating me on that. I've never heard that. Sounds deep.
It's something like that. I'm going to Google it in a bit, but I'll have a little look. But yeah, I think it's like, you know, a good example is someone that's kind of been sort of working out hard and they've been exercising. They've you know, got stronger, fitter. They might have lost weight, lost body fat, and they're doing really well. But then they feel that they haven't done as well as the person next to them, for example, because they've compared themselves to someone else or another situation. They've basically stolen all that achievement and that joy away from themselves because they're then comparing themselves to someone else's journey. So I think that's kind of a thing as well, as a lot of people might sort of fall into that trap.
That's that core question of, like, where do you premise your joy?
Yeah.
Where do you get your happiness from?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a big existential question.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. And I think we kind of touched on that last episode as well, didn't we? With that whole thing of trying not to... You haven't always got to be better than before.
Mm.
I think that's one big thing, because at some point there is a point of diminishing returns.
Yeah.
Where, you know, like, say for example, it's always good to do this in a physical sense, but as we age, you're going to get to a point where you can't get stronger than you used to be when you were in your 30s. You can't get fitter than you used to be when you were 20, 30. And I think it's kind of that acceptance of that as well. And that's another thing we need to kind of sort of work through into that mindset. Mm. Is that it's being your best on that day, not always being better than before or better than someone else. It's what you can give for that day is the biggest thing. It's one of our core principles that we kind of have, is that if you're doing the best for that day, that's cool. And your best for that day, it might literally be you rolled up to the gym, you did some foam rolling and you went home. Or your best for that day might be, you know, you loaded 200 kilos on the bar and smashed out more reps than you've ever done. That best is like a sort of, it's not a fixed point. It's always something that can change and alter and stuff. So your best on that day is literally your best on that day. And if you can start thinking about that as well, I think that can be a really powerful tool to help people to not put so much pressure on themselves and not compare themselves to a different version or a different kind of week or day or
person.
Vision of themselves.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Hmm.
Totally makes sense.
Interesting. Cool. Yeah. All right. Well, we're definitely going to recover this. Just quickly before we do finish, when you do feel like not at your best, do you find there's anything in particular that you do feel helps, or do you feel it is a case of riding it out and just, it's just is what it is, or?
Oh, damn, okay, let me think about that. It depends, it's a case by case thing. Like if I'm trying to get through a writing thing and I've got a deadline in a week and I know I haven't, I started late or something, then what does actually help is shutting everything off, getting my head down. And yeah, you can argue that's not healthy, I guess. Right, not asking for help, but there's no one could physically help me on that. It is case by case.
Mm.
If it's something physical, if it's something, look, I'm a glutton for attention.
Mm.
If someone messaged me saying, ask me if I'm okay, that's nice to me. As in, that does help me get through something. Like that does kind of empower me and encourage me to do things.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to say. There's no one size fits all on that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there's a bunch of different things.
Yeah.
How about yourself?
Mine varies. Sometimes it is literally just getting through that day. Sometimes I find I'll go out, like, and I'll do a bit of exercise or get some fresh air or go to a nice coffee shop, get a drink, get a piece of cake and whatever. And sometimes that sort of stuff can help. But I find sometimes it's just a case of riding that storm a little bit.
Yeah.
There was one day last Wednesday. I've got this weird thing with Wednesdays at the minute. So, we don't open the gym until the afternoon. So it's a chance, because we work like long days, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. So Wednesdays is a day just to kind of recover, refresh, not have to do the 5 a.m. get up, and give us a bit of chance to recover for the rest of the week. But I do find that then I feel those days, instead of being that rest and relaxation day, I find it quite stressful that I'm not doing something. And I sort of try and force myself to shut off, but sometimes I find that more stressful than actually just, you know, doing some work. Or maybe if I came to the gym, I'd find it easier to do that in the mornings as well. So this is something I have to figure out. But like last Wednesday, I just felt proper, like, I felt really sort of anxious that I wasn't working and doing things and kind of building the business. Although I kind of felt physically knackered, and I thought I need to have a bit of a recovery day and sort of chill out a little bit. But I tried to go to the park, I tried to walk it off, went for a nice walk, stuck a podcast on. And usually these are things that will kind of snap me out of it. But for whatever reason that day, I just couldn't get past that point of just feeling shit that day. And it was one of them where I just kind of, you know, I just rode it through. And again, I think it's that feeling as well that my whole sort of outlook is I always try and find solutions and try and fix things. Where sometimes you don't need to fix things. And this is what I've realized a lot. This is where Soap's kind of helped me realize this. You don't always need to fix things. You don't always need to kind of have a solution. And I'm a very solutions-based person. So when Soap was struggling, I was like, oh, why don't we try this? Why don't we do that? Why don't we go for a walk? Why don't we kind of, you know, do something? And she was like, you know what? I just want to sit here and feel a bit of shit today. So I think it's also that understanding as well, if it's all right to feel like that and it's okay to kind of go through definitely. That.
That's that deep line of thinking that kind of transcends any facet of that. That kind of mentality can help, I found anyway, can help with every bit of your life.
Mm.
When you just say to yourself, it's okay to fuck up.
Mm.
It's okay to lose something. It all goes back to one thing. It's either arrogance inside myself or ignorance inside myself.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of these two things, right? And once I get over the fact that I don't want to be arrogant or ignorant, and life is just a bit kind of crap for everyone sometimes, right? Mm. Then, yeah, it's okay to just say, nah, it's fine. It is that relationship example. It's the same, like, sometimes, like, everyone gets into a bit of tiffs in the relationship and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm fine. I'm the same. I'm pragmatic. I want to, like, why don't you try this? Why don't you try this?
Mm.
But in my head, until someone tells me and educates me, sometimes it's okay to just go, they just want to be heard, they just want to listen, that's it, that's all you have to do.
And that's it,
problem solved. More or less.
That's definitely something I've learned. The last sort of 12-18 months has been a big thing for me. So yeah, this is interesting. I like this topic, and it's something that I think everyone can kind of benefit from understanding a bit more. And I do want to understand a bit more about that as well, to kind of just how to react in certain situations and stuff. So again, if there's any experts out there on this listening to this, get in touch, drop us an email. And how do you do the voice notes? Do we have to send them a link?
Yes.
Yeah. So we'll get some links out. I'll put the link in the show notes. So if you do want to kind of send us like a little bit of feedback in there, we can hear your sort of your thoughts or questions and stuff, and we can add them into the next episode and kind of go through that as well. But yeah, we'll wrap this section up for the time being. And we'll go into a little interlude, and we'll start talking about sort of developing a bit of a mindset of graft. Okay, brother. So we are going to talk a little bit about, so obviously one of our BFAST 5 principles, the A in BFAST stands for attitude. And we tried to sort of break that down to a bit of an acronym, which is graft. And we're going to cover a little bit of each of those sections today. So these kind of grow and change, like anything I do. With this, it always evolves. I think a lot of people are scared to admit when they've done something that's kind of outdated or wrong or whatever, but I try and evolve this, and I've literally just changed one, like, you know, when we started this conversation, from the G in graft. So it's the attitude of graft, and it's that little acronym, and it is growth mindset, resilience, action, failing forwards, and tenacity. But again, they'll evolve over time. So before we even started the podcast, the G was grit, or even gratitude as well. And these things can all tie into it.
Ooh.
But kind of like sort of a few little things that we're going to sort of go through. First of all, though, in the last section, we were just talking about what helps you to feel better. You missed something off there, and I want you to tell us all what it is.
If no one else does this, you're all lying. When I feel down or I feel a bit anxious, do you not also go on the internet, especially things like Reddit or Instagram, and find specific profiles of cute dogs and animals and just look at them for like half an hour? That is the most gratifying thing to look at. It's just 30 seconds of a clip of pure joy and happiness looking at this innocent, cute-ass creature. You can't deny how fulfilling that is.
What's the Reddit for people that are on Reddit? What do we need to look for? The subreddit?
Rare puppers.
And
Instagram, it's
round boys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shout out. So show
me that one. So round boys on Instagram is it's chubby little animals, whether they're like kind of young or just like eating too much or whatever it is. But it's pretty funny as well. So check them out. It's gonna make you feel better. Okay, cool. So let's get to that G then, so that growth mindset. So there's a book by Carol Dweck called Mindset. And in that book, she breaks your attitude and your mindset down into two elements. And it's either a growth mindset or a fixed mindset. And one thing we always want to try and develop is more of this growth mindset. So basically, we'll put maybe, if I can find out to put pictures in the show notes and stuff, I'd like to put that up. But if I just find the image we have. So essentially, a growth mindset is seeing failure as an opportunity to grow. It's seeing challenges as something that helps you to grow. It is understanding that it's your attitude and your effort that determine your abilities and what you kind of get out of something. And it's understanding that feedback is constructive as well, because I think a lot of times when we're sort of in this fixed mindset, as if someone gives me feedback, it is something that can be, you know, seen as a negative thing, where really feedback is something that can help us improve and help us get better. And it's also having an attitude of being willing to try, whether that's trying new things or putting more effort in. In a gym context, that growth mindset to me is my sort of favorite sort of people to work with, are the people that want to try those new things and try that new weight or try that new exercise that they can't do very well, but they want to kind of get better at it. And for me, that is like the perfect sort of mindset to adopt, rather than it being, you know, I can't do, you know, it might be, I can't do a Turkish get up. I'm never going to do them. I hate them. I'm not even going to try. That's the fixed mindset that we're trying to sort of develop out of people. And understanding these challenges and frustrations are something that's good to challenge us. Whereas a lot of people see a failure as the limit of their abilities. And they see it as if they're not good at something now, they are never going to be good at it. Or it's, you know, that kind of attitude that people have of like, we kind of create that narrative, don't we, of I've always been this.
Self-defeating.
Yeah.
Yeah, as in like you justify, like it's that example I gave in the last section.
Mm-hmm.
As in I will end up rationalising something in my head just to make an excuse, if mm-hmm. I was to be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it. And I think it's, like I say, one of the biggest things is, I think did we talk about this last episode, the Tom Foxley stuff?
The bound nature, free nature.
Yeah.
I think we covered it.
But more so as well. Oh, so that was the episode that we lost, actually.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. So we will go through this in a second as well. But we went through a bit of work on this mindset course. And essentially, one of the big things is learning our internal stories and our internal narratives. So a lot of the times in this fixed mindset, it might be something that we were rubbish at as kids, but we still sort of feel like that now. So it's like, you know, mine might even be, you know, I said in the last section, like I'm a bit of a lone wolf. That probably is a bit of a fixed mindset, really, because in order for me to develop, whether it's like this podcast or this the business or whatever it might be, I'm going to need a team and need people like yourself around that are going to help build that. So I can't have that fixed mindset of being the lone wolf. Mm. I need to understand that that's kind of got me this far. But then to do the next step, I need to be able to kind of move away from that mindset. So it's kind of, that is, you know, something again to work through and to challenge. And it's also, I think a lot of these things, you know, so on this picture we're looking at, a lot of things is, you know, when I'm frustrated, I give up. That's a classic in things like fitness and dieting, I would say, don't you agree?
Yeah, 100%. It kind of goes back to how you view yourself first, I feel, and being completely, like, taking a step back and being completely honest with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I feel like the premise of the Tom Foxley thing was, especially. Like, we'll cover it together.
Mm-hmm.
But the gist would be to, I guess, to be honest with yourself and to get to that point where you're feeling free and that kind of genuinely happy feeling with yourself. Mm-hmm. You've got to kind of take a step back first and self-criticize.
Mm-hmm.
I guess.
Yeah. And again, that comes back to that feedback that we just talked about, that kind of that self-evaluation and that understanding where you're going wrong or where you're struggling at the minute, but seeing that as a sort of a something you can then develop a plan off.
Yeah.
And I think if we can start developing that growth mindset, that's going to really kind of, it's just a different way of thinking about things, because you kind of start actively seeking challenges and seeking discomfort and looking at those things as something that's going to push you to that next level or allow you to kind of reinvent certain areas of yourself. Whereas if we shy away from those challenges and kind of like, you know, don't want to take feedback on board and things like that, then it can kind of hold us back for the long term. It'll keep us stuck in that fixed position. And it's really hard to develop and be able to sort of move forwards if you can't then develop that sort of attitude of that growth mindset.
Would you agree with this sentence that we are our own worst enemies half the time?
Yes, 100%.
As in just a blunt statement, we are our own worst enemies and we kind of force ourselves into a feedback loop.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're trying to say is, in terms of a growth mindset,
yeah,
is accepting this, mm-hmm, as normal human nature, everyone does it, that we are our own worst enemies,
mm-hmm,
and coming out of that with specific tools, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think especially for myself, being like self-employed for the last, what, like really the last sort of 10 years now, is I probably find it harder than anyone to take that feedback on board, because I don't have any sort of real direction or anyone above me saying, look, you're doing that bad, sort it out, do this. And since Soph came into BeFast, that's really helped me, because she's not afraid to tell me when I'm sort of like doing some shit, or if I need to kind of like put my ideas up a little bit, she's happy to kind of do that with me as well. But sort of historically, not having that sort of that boss figure or that kind of like that set job role or that specific set of criteria that I have to achieve each day, I find that can be something that sort of held me back a little bit as well. So I think it was, I think that's definitely something that's important.
That's a perfect example. It's the first step of saying, okay, this is what I'm doing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah, so that's it. So that's the growth mindset. So yeah, just making sure that when we do this, like when we think about these things, is developing that mindset of, if I face a challenge, I'm going to go head forth into it, and I'm going to sort of accept it, and I'm going to try and move past it rather than shying away from it. I think if you can take that from it, that's probably the biggest thing in starting to develop a growth mindset, is seeing those challenges as something to learn from and improve from, not something that's bad for you.
Yeah, I get that.
Right, we've got a bit of a mix up here. We've got a bit of a change of pace, because we have a special guest in the house. Miss Sophie Walton has just joined us. So let us know who you are.
Okay. I am the other person of BeFast Fitness. So I'm one of the coaches here with Jamie, building the best gym in the world.
Yeah. And if you didn't know, we are also engaged. So so it's an interesting challenge, and I think we'll do a whole episode on this, because it's kind of that challenge of, you know, we work together, we live together, we run the business together. So pretty much it's quite a rare situation, isn't it?
Yeah. That's a unique dynamic that needs that. When people are thinking about fitness, I don't know a story like that in the fitness world. That is a very unique dynamic.
So quite cool to see how we face them, because like I said, we've been talking about just a bit earlier in the podcast, talking about challenges that we face and stuff like that, and those different sort of challenges that we go through, isn't there, of like, for
massively,
us
yeah.
It's, I'd say for me, like, you'll probably explain this better than me, but I'm very much like, you know, I try and separate work us from relationship us, but it's not
possible. We'll have like a conversation about work, and he'll be like, right, I'm not your fiance at this time, Sophie. I'm like, but you are. I can't just be like, you know, we're our business partners. Like, he really separates it, but it's not as easy as that.
Yeah, so I think that'll be a good episode to cover that.
I want to untangle that song.
Yeah.
We should get like
curiosity about how you guys work.
That's it. We'll get one in. We'll get Mandy in as well. We'll have a couples podcast.
Why don't you just yell at me all day? Sorry, man. Sorry.
Oh. So basically, we were just talking about the growth mindset of kind of seeing challenges as something to learn and grow from, not something to shy away from. That was the G in our GRAFT acronym for the BeFast Attitude. The R, at the moment, it stands for resilience. And this was what our last podcast was on, when we lost that last podcast. But it'd be interesting, you know, again, so I was just kind of telling people a little bit about your backstory of like last year and that sort of struggle with the anxiety side of things. So I'd like to kind of first of all hear your take on what resilience means to you from like kind of a physical and a mental perspective. Let us know a little bit more about kind of that side of things.
Well, like, the word like resilience to me is like, we can never plan what life is going to throw at us, like, ever. Do you know when we always say to, when people always come with this like, okay, I have 6 weeks where I'm just going to go ahead and like push it now for 6 weeks. I'm on it, people will always say. I'm on it now for 6 weeks. And it's like, how can you say that? You have no idea what the next 6 weeks is going to throw at you. It's really difficult to say that. So it's being able to keep going while life will basically throw crap at you along the way. And for you to still try and work at the best of your capabilities and not allow these things to stop you. So we can't always be perfect. We can't always be on it. We can't always be our best selves, but we can try and be the best version at that time. So when I really struggled with like the anxiety and the depression, like, you know, I thought I was at my weakest ever. I thought, this is just, how am I ever going to get through this? But we realise that through these times, those are the times where we're actually at our strongest, because those are the times where we actually have to be strong, because you can't be anything else. So my resilience through that time was, right, okay, I can't give it all I can to my health and my fitness, but I can give something towards it. So it was getting out of bed and going for a walk. And that, to me, was like what I could do at that time. And I was, you know, it took me a long time to then go, okay, now my resilience is a lot different. You know, it's not, that's, you know, I can do other things that I feel like is really resilient to me. So I might have some bad news, but I'm like, well, I can still go and really train hard at the gym. Mm-hmm. So it's at whatever stage you are in your life, whether it's a really tough stage, or it's a busier stage, where it's a stage where you can really push at a certain area in your life, it's not allowing the things around you to stop you from, like, basically giving up.
That was
powerful. Yeah, that was powerful. And, like, what, how's that kind of, how's that changed you as a person, kind of having that sort of, that attitude towards it? Because I was just saying before, obviously, you went through, like, quite an intense period of, like, therapy and, you know, a lot of these things and your non-negotiables that you used to do. Mm-hmm. How do you feel, like, looking back and reflecting it before you went through that situation, how do you feel now, in terms of, like, in terms of resilience, but also just in terms of, like, your general outlook compared to before you went through that sort of period?
Oh God, like, I feel like a different person. I feel like I've grown into, like, the things that used to, like, bother me, the things that I used to feel were such big deals, you just realise that they're not. Your importance in life really changes. And I prioritise myself so much more. Like, you know, the people always, like, say, you know, it might be a bit, you know, selfish or whatever. Like, I am the most important person ever. Like, Jamie, you're the most important person for yourself ever. V, you're the most important person for yourself ever. And I used to put a lot of, like, that on you. So I used to always be like, Jamie can make me happy, but it's impossible. The only person that ever make you happy is yourself. So I've just changed to, like, being like, God, I'm in, like, control of me and, like, my happiness and my power. So I want to do this and I can do that. And I want Jamie to come on the journey with me. I want him there, and, like, I enjoy having his company there. But at the same time, I don't need him there. And it's understanding that difference of a need and a want and a love that we, like, have because I want you to be around. But I'm not, like, you know, if I, you know, expectations of other people, like, go down, if that makes sense.
Oh, definitely.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't expect anything as much now. But you have to do this or that's going to ruin my day. No, like, I put all the expectations on myself and what I expect from me, but not necessarily other people.
Yeah. You ever heard of the 7-year itch when it comes to relationships?
Yes, yes.
It's that whole idea, I don't know if this is a proven fact or anything, it's the idea that when people get overly dependent on each other, when people get overly dependent and they, it becomes a relationship between, it's not just romantic relationships, it's between anything, yeah, business partners, anything like that, I guess. It's the idea that when you rely on the person so much, right, that you cannot continue without them. Not in an emotional sense, in the sense that they have now become such a part of you.
Yeah.
Mm.
That if they were gone, that's it. That's a part of you gone, which sounds really, like, damaging emotionally, and it sounds really deep. And it is. That's the whole point, mm-hmm, right? But is that, in terms of progressing life, how then do you progress if that person is gone?
Yeah.
Like, for, if it's a romantic relationship, if you break up.
Yeah.
If it's a business partner relationship, if yeah, like, you know, you're not business partners anymore. Yeah. If it's a friendship, like, how do I go out on a Friday night anymore if that person's not there and I'm just going to be sitting at home?
Yeah.
Is it more healthy to have your circle and then build that circle around you, a support network, basically? You're pulling each other up as opposed to being each other.
Yeah. Exactly, exactly. And that's why as well, I think I've become, you know, a lot more independent in myself. I was like, you know, Jamie would always be panicked if I was left by myself. He'd always be like, what are you going to do? Because I used to not like my own company. I used to literally be like, well, I need to plan, like, everything if Jamie's not with me. And now, if I have a weekend by myself or night, my gosh, it's the most exciting thing ever. I, like, have a bath, wash my hair, get my nails done, have a nap.
See, this is the interesting thing, because obviously you went through that process with the therapy and stuff like that and have kind of unpacked that. But I still feel like, especially in that aspect of things, I am still not there with you there. So I still worry about you. I still feel like, take yesterday morning, for example, I did the morning shift at the gym and I felt the need to rush back and get back so that you weren't on your own. and this not that, then it's hard because it creates, I feel stressed having to rush around. And it's just one of those things where I've kind of not impacted that myself yet. So it's
that's why you've now got to realise that you're the most important person. Because what did you do when you got home? You realised that I was sat there with Ringo, the dog, having a great time, like literally watching the Great British Bake Off.
Yeah.
And like, you know, he comes in, he's like, oh, you're all right. I'm like, of course I'm all right. What do you mean?
So yeah, I need to work on that. And then I did do it, to be fair, because I just went and sat on the computer for 2 hours. Yeah. But yeah, so it's, yeah. But again, that comes down to that resilience is kind of learning. And it does come into the same sort of thing. It comes into that growth mindset. A lot of these things kind of interleave, but resilience is that ability to be able to kind of bounce back and keep going and keep sort of pushing through. And, you know, standing back up when you take that tumble. And I think that's that biggest thing where, as I think a lot of people find it hard to do that, or they don't have, like you mentioned support networks, V, about having that support network in place. I think that's super important, whether that is like an external thing, whether it's a close group of friends, someone you trust. But I think building that resilience is a lot easier if you have the right support around you as well. And I'd say even like with obviously what we do here, so if you don't know what BFast Fitness is, it is a personal training studio. Although we work in groups and stuff like that, you never come here and just have to do your own thing like you would at a normal gym. And I think that kind of is one of the things that helps accelerate people's building that resilience, if you like, because we kind of get them into that habit of coming and showing up, letting them know it's okay. If you don't feel great that day, it's cool. Just do your best for that day. Like, it doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to go and smash records and stuff.
And like, what people, a lot of people just focus on what they can't do. So yeah. You'll be like, oh, I've hurt my wrist, so I'm not going to come in. And it's like, you have a lot of other parts of your body. Mm. You have you know, you've got your legs, you've got your arms, you've got your shoulders, you've got your core, you've got literally. So it's building that resilience of going, I know this is what you can't do, but let's focus on what you can. Because your cans will be a lot more than you can't. Mm. I promise you that.
Yeah, you'd have to literally be in a full body cast to start people doing something.
Yeah.
So it's yeah, but it is. It's good. So building up resilience is definitely is like the step two in our BFast attitude of graft.
I feel like this is something I've definitely learned after meeting you two. When I thought of resilience, I separated physical and mental resilience.
Mm.
As in, I thought physical resilience. Okay, just how much can I push myself in the gym? And not really thought about the whole mental side of it, really. Mental side of it is like, you know, dealing with emotional and stress, anxieties and stuff like that as well, but not understanding, appreciating it all ties in together. Mm. It's like what we were talking about, the whole like the 5 minutes procrastination thing. Mm. That is basically emotional anxiety, resilience in that sense. And it's only since coming here and learning how to appreciate myself and my body and my limitations that you do reliably and ties together. Got to work on both, right?
Yeah, it's a massive thing. And I think that's going to become more and more prominent as well. Because like we were saying before, it is a big topic at the minute, is that mental well-being. And I think a lot of people, when they start to understand that the physical and mental are linked, like if you feel shit, then, you know, physically, doing something physical can help you in that mental mind state. And at the same time, if you work on that mindset, it'll allow you to push hard on the physical side. So it all is interlinked and interweaved, because that was my big thing. One of my internal narratives and internal stories is that I always start something and then give it up. So I do this a lot with like things like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or DJing, or I did an engineering course and then kind of gave it up on it. I mean, that was the best step I ever made for that one. But there's other certain things where I've kind of developed that internal narrative of finally get to a point and then pull back. And even building a business to some point as well, it's happened a lot in the past, hasn't it? So it's like getting to that point and being able to sort of push through from that. And I think the more I start to build on that mindset, when I did that stuff with Tom Foxley last year, and his whole thing is embracing hardship and pushing to look for that discomfort, I found that's made me train better, but I've also found that's made me mentally want to push more when things get tougher as well. And that also is another thing that kind of ties in. So it's kind of like that balance. I push more through the pain in training now than I ever used to, because I'm seeking that discomfort. But that discomfort is a mindset thing. I can't remember what the percentage is. There's something, someone was talking about percentages in terms of when your body thinks it needs to give up versus when it actually physically is exhausted. Yeah. It's like you'll start giving up mentally at that 40% of your actual physical capacity or something like that. So it's crazy. And obviously, the more you can kind of tie these things together and work both of those in, the more you'll be able to sort of grow from that, build from that, and be able to kind of push that capacity up higher and higher each time.
That segues into the question I was going to ask was, and I just noticed the next thing anyway, what actions and tools do you equip yourself with to help yourself mentally and physically with the resilience?
So yeah, so the A in GRAFT stands for action, and it's one of the biggest things I think is, and one of the things we try and get people to focus on more than anything, is you can control your actions, but you can't control your outcomes. So as much as you want to, I don't know, whatever your fitness goal is, as much as you want to deadlift 200 kilos, as much as you want to lose 3 stone, as much as you want to run a marathon, that outcome is never going to come to fruition unless you start breaking down the actions and the habits and the steps that get you to that point. And if as many people focused on, people, especially with weight, isn't it? People become obsessed by what the scales say and the outcome, and stepping on those scales, and that's the obsession. I'll weigh myself every day, I'll look at it, I'll get pissed off if it hasn't moved the right way, I'll be happy if it's moved the way I want it to go. People put so much emphasis on that outcome, even though obviously you can control it to some degree, but you can't specifically say this is what it's going to be. Whereas if they put that amount of obsession and that amount of care into the actions that they know would help to push towards that, the outcome's going to solve itself anyway. So the biggest thing for us is actions are the thing that's going to kind of get you to that goal, not sort of focusing and obsessing on the outcome.
And that's why we're massive believers on, celebrating your actions and not your outcome. Because your actions are the habits that you're creating, and they should be over time. They should be things that you're going to do forever, like not just to do a 6-week transformation with these little, what are these called?
Quotation marks.
Little quotation speech marks.
Yeah. Bunny ears.
That's why it's really great to always congratulate on the actions that you're taking instead of just focusing on the outcome. Like, I don't like it when after a week they're going, oh, well, I can't see any differences. I'm like, yeah, but for a week you've come in, you've done X amount of sessions, you've actually been really motivated, you've been a great person to have around. Like, these are great things. I really loved having you here. This has been great. Like, let's not, like, those scales or whatever, it will come once you've got these actions into place over time.
Yeah, and I think that kind of ties back in as well. We talked in the first section about that growth mindset and that book Mindset by Carol Dweck. One of the things that she said in there that can, from our perspective as coaches, is you have to be careful of what you praise people on as well. So like you're saying, like in the past, like weight loss clubs, they'll get people to stand on the scales at the front of the gym and they'll clap if they've lost a pound, and then if they haven't, it's like, ugh. And it's like, it creates that bad mindset.
Shame.
Game of Thrones, man.
Shame. Yeah.
So I don't know about if you've ever been to a Weight Watchers club, I don't know if they get you to walk naked down the aisle and shame you from behind, but it's the same sort of concept. If you haven't done that outcome that week, regardless of you might have done 10 amazing things, you might have done 3 exercise sessions, you might have done 3 yoga sessions, you might have done 3 walks, you might have made a healthy meal for your family 3 nights of the week. They don't care about that if the scales haven't moved.
Yeah. Oh.
And that's like,
we'll have to do a whole one on this one, because
we've
got
a whole podcast on that coming.
I'm just like, I just want to be like, do you know what? Like, women are so much more. Like, newsflash, we are so much more than the scales. Like, we can do and achieve and be so much more. Mm-hmm. Like, but they just don't even allow you to realize that about yourself.
And I think in that book, one of the things they talked a lot about. The difference between people when they were, like, take someone that's an athlete and someone that was praised on their natural ability and their talent.
Mm.
And what it actually does is you think you're doing them a favor, saying, oh, you're so gifted, you're so talented, you've got this natural ability. But what that does is then is when they inevitably make that mistake or aren't able to get to that next step, they think, oh, well, maybe I haven't got that natural ability, maybe I don't have the talent for it. And it can actually destroy them as an athlete and a person and break them down.
Yeah.
Whereas if you praise their work ethic and their output, and they're like, instead of saying, oh, you're so naturally gifted, say things like, you've worked really hard for this outcome. You've trained, you've trained a lot, you've recovered, you've dedicated yourself. Yeah. That will create a much stronger mindset in people. And they're the sort of people that go on to be successful, rather than the people, I'm sure we all know people that you've seen or thought of, like, that natural talent, but then they kind of go off the rails. it comes back to that same thing of praising that wrong thing. We're praising those outcomes or that ability rather than the actions.
They were talking about that, you know, BJ Penn, MMA fighter. I think when he was the youngest BJJ black belt, and he won a tournament or something like his early 20s at that time, was never even heard of. And when he transitioned to MMA, there was the same kind of narrative around him. He was like, he's naturally talented athlete, naturally talented grappling guy, like just a phenom or something. And he gets to the point now where you can see, I mean, he's a great fighter, but he's on a losing streak at the moment. I'm not saying it's all because obviously he was praised for his natural talent.
Yeah.
He definitely obviously put work in and stuff as well. But you can see the mindset that emanates from that too.
Yeah.
As in, like, either it goes one or two ways, I feel. Either people are praising me for my natural ability, so I don't really have to work that hard anymore. Or, yeah, you said, it goes into what Jamie said. People are praising my natural ability, and if I lose, something's wrong. I did something wrong, right? Maybe I didn't have it inherently in me in the first place.
Yeah.
And both of those paths sound really unhealthy.
It's like a lot of people say to me, like, oh, but Sophie, you're saying, like, when I'm coaching people in the gym, and I'm like, oh, we're going to do this movement, we're going to do that movement, and I'll show them the movement. A lot of people say, you make it look so easy, but you're so natural at it. And I'm like, you've come in 6 years later from my journey. Like, if we go back to when I first started with you, Jamie, I couldn't physically do anything. I was the most unnaturalist ever when it came to lifting weights or holding a plank or whatever it was. Like, I was terrible, but I've put in a lot of work. I've really dedicated myself to being like, I am going to get good at this. And it, now people walk in and think, oh, but you're natural. No. You've just come in 6 years late.
It goes back to that thing we were talking about in the first episode. You guys are not superhuman. As much as I like to think you are.
No, we are not.
I just like to think it because it feels like it's easy to understand in my head then that's you two are the goal. Yeah. Something, but what people... I definitely did it. You missed the journey.
Yeah.
That's it. You only see the end goal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And people think that a lot about PTs. They think that they're like the superhuman, like, you know, person. And we're just like, we're not. We do all the same as everybody else. But we have just had to put in some hard work for ourselves.
Yeah, definitely, 100%. And it does. It's one of the things where, again, this could be a whole podcast in and of itself, but it's having those consistent actions that you stick to and those actions that you take and controlling those actions. I think that's where the long-term success comes from.
Yeah.
there's still something we want to try and squash with this podcast as we go through is this whole all or nothing mentality.
Yeah.
Because the all mentality usually gets people nothing because they'll be all in for, you know, a month, a week, 6 weeks, but then it goes back to nothing. I've never been like that. I've never been all or nothing. I don't think with anything. And that's why I kind of consistently just like sort of chip away at things because I might not be working at 100%. Sometimes I might literally be working at 50% of my capacity and my ability, but I'll do that consistently rather than being 100% on it or 100% off it. So a good case in point at the minute, like my nutrition's not the best at the minute. I know I could improve it. I know I could be eating more greens and I could be kind of eating, I need to get more calories in. I could probably be eating less, like, you know, less junk and stuff like that. But I've not fallen off completely. Like, I'll still have my main meals with, like, you know, a couple of portions of veg in there, my protein in there. I'll have that maybe twice a day. If I can't eat it physically, then I'll get like a super shake and I'll blend all the stuff up that I need. And I'll still have my things on top. I've got a thing for these cookies at the minute. Oh, my days.
Describe the cookies. They are slow detail.
They are called brownie cookies. They sell them in Aldi at the minute. I can't remember. I think the brand's called Melba. They come in like a burgundy packet, but they're sort of like their biscuits. Mm-hmm. But if you dunk them in tea, they get that texture back and they're like brownies. And oh, my days, they are amazing. And like... That is, you know, if I was living in my perfect world, I probably wouldn't be having as many of those as I am at the minute. But it's okay. It's cool. I'm going to enjoy them. I'm going to have four or five at a time. I'm going to smash them in. But, you know, I'm still keeping some of my habits on top. Whereas some people will then think, you know, I've had four or five biscuits. Oh, you know, I've cocked everything up. Like, that's it. Now I'm going to go off the wagon. I'm just going to eat shit all the time. I'm going to binge. And that's where people go in. They think they have to be perfect all the time. And I think if more people can understand it, especially as the coaches and trainers, that we're not perfect, but we have these actions that we do consistently to keep us on track, that's why we can sort of maintain a level and stay somewhat around where we always want to be, rather than these massive fluctuations and swings of, like, you know, success and then not success.
I am literally, like, not I'm a little bit, you know, I've gone a bit back on my training recently. My nutrition's not 100%. However, like, I am at this stage probably the fittest I've thought I could ever be. So, like, I have been fitter and healthier and slimmer than the person I am right now. But going back to the 6 year me, I never even thought I could get to this place, which I currently see as, like, just taking a step back. And that to me is amazing. Like, I'm still strong, I'm still quite fast, I still do eat well, but I do have my nibbles and treats on top. But 6 years ago, where I am now, I, like, would have thought was, like, super, super fit. But now that I know what I'm capable of, I know that right now this is a bit of a step back for me. Yeah.
It's a weird phenomenon. People attach shame to food.
Oh, my God.
It's a weird thing. So when you fail...
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I'm trying to characterize failure when it comes to food. Like, if...
There's nothing.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
No. I think a lot of people see failure as, like, you know, there's this whole thing about having to eat clean and stuff like that. And people think if they have something that's not quote-unquote clean, then they've failed the plan.
Yeah.
And that's when they can kind of fall off the wagon with that. And that's, again, something that, like, you know, all these sort of things, these fatty things and clean eating and all these things that create that negative relationship with food. I think that's, again, that's something we need to kind of tackle and break down. But it is, like, we were talking yesterday, weren't we, about the difference between, like, going back when people are in sort of challenging situations where it's like stress or anxiety or anything like that, or something like that's challenging you in life. It's interesting. What I want to understand is people's reactions to it. Because for me and Soph, it is to not eat.
Yeah.
And we'll lose, like, weight and lose strength and lose fitness that way. But then for some people, it's the opposite, and it's kind of eating loads and binging and just kind of eating their way, comfort eating.
Well, people have different ways.
It's a podcast, you can't see. Hands up.
People have different ways of, like, dealing with that, like, sort of stress. And I always say to people, like, there's no such thing as good or bad food, because going back to when I went down to 46 kg, wasn't eating anything at all, I always say, at that point, when I was then going, okay, I'm actually feeling a bit hungry, what do you think at the time would be better for me? A salad? Or getting some bloody calories in. So it would have been better to me to have something that was quite calorie dense so that my body was getting some extra calories. It wouldn't have been good for me to go, I'm going to have some leafy greens. Like, it would have literally been pointless. So it's understanding that there's no such thing as good or bad food, because it's like any food in any situation can be really helpful to
context, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all to do with context, definitely.
Do you feel like you have to understand, like, macronutrients and stuff to get to that point where you're thinking... You know, like, carbs are probably better at this time. Leafy greens are better at this time.
Like, probably not massively. No, it's understanding the food that's going to help you at that time. So I always say to people, you know, if you've got a fat loss goal, you know, looking at the food and just going, is this going to help me or is it not? And we're not stupid. However much we like to think we're not. We're going to look at, like, a pizza or look at some, you know, grilled chicken with some, you know, rice and loads of veg. You're not going to go, well, a pizza's obviously going to be my best option now. You know, or if you've, like, you're about to run a marathon, which one's going to be better? You're probably going, oh, I need some carbs, I need some energy. Let's have a bit of that pizza, actually. And it's understanding, like, just food a little bit better.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I think it's, like, it's more habits and principles, isn't it, rather than specifics. Like, there's some things that are a given, like, obviously, getting your vegetables and greens and fruits and stuff in is good. Getting your protein is good. But... then you don't necessarily need to go down to, like, you know, some people like to get really specific with percentages and grams and stuff, and it can work for some people.
But again, I think it's excuses for people to go, I think I need to know this, that's why I'm not getting that to my goal. It's an excuse, because, you know, you don't need that. I don't do that. The most I've ever done when I went down to my slimmest and I went, like, really, like, you know, like, strict, and I really thought, this is my goal, I'm not going to let anything get in my way. The most thing I did was calories and proteins. Mm. I have never done, like, a split of, like, carbs and fats and da-da, and I achieved a fantastic goal. Mm. Like, you don't need to go in that in-depth. It's, like, it's not that deep.
And on the other hand, because I would say, like, I went too far down it. Do you remember when I first started? So there's this thing called flexible dieting that came about probably, I want to say it's starting to get popular about 6-7 years ago, because we were at the old gym. But I took it too far, to the point where I'd come home and I'd be like, I can't eat whole eggs because I'll go over my fats. And I would just have, like, you know, something different. Like, you'd want to make breakfast for me.
Yeah.
And I'd say, I can't eat that. I've already had too many eggs today, or too much fat and stuff like that. Stupid stuff like that. I think we all have to learn from it, but it doesn't need to get to that level. If people can understand the calorie goals, understand a bit about protein, then that's going to really help. And you get, like you say, you get to 90% of where you want to be just by doing those two things, rather than getting too obsessed with it and feeling that shame from it.
Yeah.
You know, going back to your heavenly brownies, brownies.
Yes.
So some could characterize that as, if you indulge in the brownies too much, you failed in that diet plan.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you say in your head you're not failing?
Just by, again, it comes back to that bigger context.
Yeah.
So even like, say for example, like, you know, even if you were to eat all those brownies in one day, say if you were to eat kind of, you know, a whole pack of them, and I think there's probably 12 in there. So each one's about 90 calories. So if you were to eat all of those brownies, it's 1200 calories. If that's an isolated incident, it's not a massive deal. It's all about the context. You know, you might not have eaten for the rest of the day. You might not be eating the next day. You might kind of have small meals. You know, it's all about context. But whereas if you're doing that thing every single day and eating those things every single day, then obviously that's going to take you further away from where you need to be. And I think that's the biggest thing, especially with like social occasions and meals out and things like that. That's when a lot of people think that they will have failed. If they've gone out and they've had like a starter, a main and dessert, and they're like, they're just like, you know, oh, let's just like forget it now. There's no point carrying on. But in the bigger context of things, you can't eat that much in one sitting to derail all that progress. So
try me.
This is going to be a good challenge. We'll have to do a live video now. You can take me to an all-you-can-eat somewhere. But like,
Jamie's not a big eater though. That's the thing. Like, he's like, you know, he's one of them people that can have a little bit of something. I am not that person.
Yeah, but again, it all comes down to context as well though, because you say that, but at the same time, even if you do that one sitting, you won't do that all day, every day.
No.
So it is context. When it comes to being healthy, it's the overall context of things we want people to understand, is that giving yourself a bit more freedom and understanding of what you're doing at that time and how to kind of tweak and change your plan based around that can give you that overall context. So if you do go out and have a skinful on Saturday and finish up with a kebab, you know, it is what it is. Just, you know, you can move on and just get back on track at the next opportunity. Like, you don't have to think about messing your plan up. You just literally get back on track and just get back to where you were beforehand. And in the grand scheme of things, I think like, so 1 pound of fat is the equivalent to 3,500 calories. Even if you ate, you know, even if you ate 7,000 calories in a day, it's not a big thing. It's not a massive deal. You'll be able to kind of work that back and get that back quite quickly if you just get back on track at the next opportunity, rather than seeing it as that failure. So I think that's a big thing.
Is that what you mean by fail forward?
Yeah, kind of. So that brings us into the F of the graft attitude. Fail forward is basically seeing failures or mistakes as something to learn and grow from. And again, we kind of cover this a little bit more today in the growth mindset, but a lot of people think failing is a bad thing and they're scared. Like, especially, I'm going to say this in a physical context in the gym as well, a lot of people won't want to try a certain thing because they don't think they can do it. But if you fail, who cares? Say let's talk about a deadlift, for example. It's like one of the biggest strength lifts you can do. You grab a heavy bar, pick it up off the floor, put it back down again. A lot of people are scared to push themselves because they don't want to see themselves as failing, whether that's in front of other people or failing to themselves. They'll see that as something to not even bother trying and attempting, because if you don't attempt it, you can't fail it. But if you don't attempt it and you don't fail from something, how are you going to know how far you can push yourself? How are you going to give yourself that plan of action? How are you going to give yourself something to work towards? So for me, the attitude of failing forwards is about not being scared to try things, not being scared to put yourself out of your comfort zone, not being scared to fail, because like you say, you can't fail unless you give up.
Yeah.
You might have failed at something, but you haven't failed as a whole if you refuse to give up and you go back and you try again and you create a plan, and you sort of, you know, you keep going and keep working, which will kind of come to the last point in a second as well. But that's my sort of take on it. I'm just trying to think of specific examples. I'll go back to my deadlift, to be fair. I'll go back to my deadlift example. And the biggest thing with that is I was trying to get 200 kilos on my deadlift. And I was at this place where I was lifting 195 consistently for about 6 months. And every time I tried 200, I would miss it and I'd fail it and I wouldn't get it. And it took me ages. And I think now looking back, it's probably a bit of a mental block because it's like a big round number and you see that thing on the board and it's like, whoa, it's this big challenge. But I didn't stop. I didn't give up. I kept doing, I kept showing, I kept taking action, kept turning up. And then when I stopped focusing on it so much and just started sort of focusing on the actions, then I actually hit that lift. I got that record and I think I ended up getting 10 kilos more than I thought I was going to lift. And again, it's that attitude of failing forwards and seeing those failures of every time I didn't lift it, rather than getting stuck and frustrated, it was trying it again, changing the training plan, changing some actions, changing some nutrition and keep pushing towards it and seeing that as a way to kind of like motivate rather than to pull me back. So I don't know if you guys got any specific examples you can think of or...
I'm a catchphrase guy. I like what you just said there. I feel like you could say people fail, but you're not a failure.
Mm.
Do you like that?
Yes, I like it. I love it. Trademark and it's like the, it's like, was it Michael Jordan who was like, he said all the stuff that he's failed. He's like, I have failed this affair. And he, it's like a quote. I think you can get
it. Pull it up, yeah.
Yeah. And he says, and that's why I'm so great. He went, because like, he'll just keep going. Oh, he's like, I have missed 27 really important nets. Is that what they call it in basketball?
Yeah. Yeah.
I have, you know.
Baskets.
Goals.
I don't know. You got it.
Yeah, so his quote is, so I've missed more than 9,000 shots in my career. I've lost almost 300 games. 26 times I've been trusted to take the game-winning shot and missed. I've failed over and over and over again in my life, and that is why I succeed.
Yes.
Oh, ooh, that's right in the feels, that.
You were asking for example. I've got like, okay, so when I was in the TA ages ago, one of the fitness tests you have to pass is you have to run a mile and a half. I think for recruits, it was 15 minutes. Now, in context, I was a fat little knob back then. I say that in the nicest way to myself possible. I just was unfit. I was very, very unfit. I never like exercised. I just, you think you're fit and stuff. And I failed that test so many times until to the point where I'm thinking it was right place, right time, running, getting to that mark and just passing it, right? Literally sprinting to the end and collapsing at the bottom. But I remember all those failures thinking, I'm just never going to do it.
Mm.
It's impossible. Like, I just cannot bring myself. My legs are too short. I don't have the lung capacity to do it. I just cannot run. I'm not a jogger. And I still say that to myself now.
Mm.
Now I could run a mile and a half in 15 minutes, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
Then I think the next test was 13 minutes or something.
Mm.
And I couldn't do that. It's the same thing. It's just a repeating challenge to yourself.
Yeah.
And it was more self-defeating to say I'm never going to do it, but you do naturally give yourself some credit. Everyone should give themselves some credit naturally if you just say to yourself, I'm just gonna try again.
Yeah,
you will get better.
You will. Yeah. And it's funny because people are so tough about themselves, you know, when it comes to fitness. That's the only thing that they feel like they're not good at or they can't do, when anything else in life that you've done, you've learned.
Mm.
And that's exactly the same thing that you've got to do with fitness. You can't just come in. We're not that special where we can just be like, I'm just naturally fit and I just come in and do this. But if you look back at anything that you've ever done, you've had to learn it. From the point of like just being able to walk, you learnt it. You didn't, as a kid, go, well, that's too difficult.
Screw that.
Yeah, I was going to...
Give me my look.
Yeah. You got up every day and you fell and you did and you carried on. And it's the same with your job. You didn't work... walk into your new job going, I don't need any help or support. I know exactly what I'm doing. You needed the help and support. And we're not tough on ourselves about that stuff. We allow ourselves to learn and grow. But it's the one thing we don't allow ourselves to do in the gym. Very confusing.
Yeah, that's weird.
Mm.
That is weird.
Yeah.
Especially the work thing, that's illuminating because it's true.
Yeah.
Like, who the hell walks into a job thinking I'm the, you know,
yeah,
the dog's mom.
Yeah, and I could do everything.
Actually,
and,
no, you know some people that do that.
And well, yeah, but like we go into the gym and go, oh, this is too difficult, it's too hard. But we just don't seem to do that with our job. We push and we push and we push and we go and we do it and we, you know, we succeed. And if you put that amount of effort into the gym, you would succeed in plus.
And I do think in some respects that comes down to an ego thing as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like people. I feel very entitled to be able to do something, when, especially in a fitness context. So we see it a lot. Obviously, what we run here mainly is we run group sessions and they're great. They bring a great energy, a great atmosphere. But at the same time, some people then, especially if it's a lot of people just starting out, like we sort of alluded to earlier, is they haven't seen the journey someone's gone through. So I'm going to pull up, like yourself, for example, one of the guys might come in and see you deadlifting 200 kilos. You're making it look easy.
Damn right.
But they might want to lift that straight away. And they're like, oh, I can't lift that much. Let me have a go sort of thing. But dude, you've been training 7 years and you've consistently trained, you consistently turned up. You've never really had a super extended time off. Like
when I was in London, probably.
Yeah, when you was in London and Bristol, but you were still doing jiu-jitsu and stuff, weren't you, and things like that. And
saying that, even saying that out loud, it's weird because when someone says that to me, I find that really strange because they, even with that whole 6 year journey, in my head when I'm doing that 200 kg deadlift, to even today, I'm still going, oh shit. Yeah. And they just do it just because I feel like I've done it before. I've got a precedent set.
Yeah.
Right. But obviously 6 years ago, but I had no precedence, so I had to build that up, so like climbing stairs.
Yeah.
It's a weird phenomenon, thinking, looking at someone and thinking, just seeing their outcome as and relating it to your own. It's a really strange thing.
Yeah. And I think that's the one thing we do have to kind of manage with that within people, is that kind of that understanding, that ego. And like I say, going back to not being scared to try something, but there's a level. Obviously, you're not going to get a beginner trying that straight away.
Yeah, go on, you can do it.
It's kind of understanding levels and understanding the people within themselves. If they can't do that now, that's okay. Use that as motivation if you need to. Use that as a guiding point, saying, you know, if you stay consistent, if you stay training, if you don't give up and don't have this all or nothing attitude, you'll get that point too, and you'll hit that point too. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to wrap this up fairly short now, because it's been a nice one today, actually. It's flowed nicely, but we'll wrap it up with the last one. So the last in graft, our attitude of graft, is tenacity. I don't think we need to explain too much about that, really. For me, tenacity is just the fact that, you know, you just keep going, you keep building, you keep grafting. For me, especially in a business context, I have this tenacity to make this work. You know, there's times when it's like slow growth or kind of steady, or, you know, like there's like ups and downs with the business. I'm going to keep going because there's no way I can go back to doing what I was doing before. And that's my biggest motivator, is I can't go back to the career I didn't enjoy. I can't go back to doing something that I don't want to be doing on a daily basis. And for me, that's where that tenacity comes from, is just having that sort of something that's driving you, something that's making you want to just keep going, keep working, and just keep pushing through. So I'll kind of hand it over to you guys to add to that, really. But that's my take on it. It's short, it's sweet. Just keep going, keep doing the things, keep taking action.
Tenacity. It's a weird word. But the way you just explained it there, it just seems like a bottle cap to everything.
Yeah,
it's the combination of everything you've just described.
Mm-hmm.
As in, if you kind of adhere to all these different principles, right, you should be projecting tenacity.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know, it's like, am I tenacious? Is that the question?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what's that saying? Don't be... You know what I'm going to say.
Don't I don't.
You know?
This is going to be fun. Go on, spit it out.
No, it's like, be stupid to start and too stupid to finish. No.
Yeah, that's something like that, yeah. I think
that makes sense. That actually makes sense. You're saying, am I tenacious? Am I doing that?
Yeah, like...
I think it's by being naive enough to start, but stubborn enough to finish.
Finish, and like, but and that is like your tenacity, by going, I'm going to do it. I'm just going to do it. Like, mm-hmm. you know... sign up for something. I don't know what it's going to take to get there, but let's just bloody do it, and let's just see if I can do it.
Actually, yes, we could say we're all tenacious now to a point, because like, it is back to those examples, your deadlift, the mile and a half run. It is that point in my head I'm saying, oh fuck, I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
That's all. I'm going to get angry at myself till I do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or do something. I'm just going to do it. As simple as that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When you're saying it's simple and straightforward, it is basically that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. We don't have to overthink that, really.
I know. Yeah. And I think it's even like, you know, going to the obstacle run that we're going to be doing with everybody on the 21st. I think it's the 21st. And people being really nervous about it. I'm going to just do it. Just do it. And people have done it. And that is being tenacious. That is going, I don't know what I'm getting myself in for, but you know what? I'm going to sign up.
And people do that through their day-to-day lives anyway. When you think
exactly.
about it, like when you're at work and you like emails and all that kind of stuff, like, oh fuck, I'm just gonna do it, get through it. I'm gonna get like, I go to work 9 to 5, 3 days a week, and I'm just like, when it's a busy day, I say to myself at some point, I'm just gonna get through it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
Nice. So I think we'll wrap it there. It's a nice little natural segue into the end of the podcast. But I hope you've enjoyed this one. It's been nice to talk about that. So that kind of that attitude is one of our BFAST 5 principles, and we break it down to graft. So it's that growth mindset, resilience, action, failing forward, and tenacity. So I hope you found some usefulness, and we shall be back very soon. Anything else to add? Any other topics we're going to cover?
Is that music going to come on now?
Yeah,
that music. I like that music.
We like that music. We were going for all of them. It's like, no, we want that one.
Yeah,
that,
one of the ghetto
that
one.
That speaks to our personalities. That one.
It was a good one. I liked it.
Right, peeps. Let's wrap it there then.
Bye.
Ciao for now.
Bye.